This is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how science fiction, horror, fantasy, and comics help us explore our humanity.
Hi, welcome to Sci-Fi Talk. I'm Tony Tolato. I recently spoke to Tom Stevens, who plays Jason Higgins, the young disciple of David Pilcher on Wayward Pines. He is now guiding the leading remnants of humanity. Here is our conversation recently about this intriguing role and how the Abbeys could play a big part coming up. Hey, Tom, how are you? Great to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you, too.
Hey, my wife and I have been watching the show, and the best compliment that she can give you is that she totally hates your character.
Yes! That's all that I hope for.
There is more Sci-Fi Talk, so stay tuned.
What's interesting is when you play a character like him, and other actors have told me that when you play a guy who's, I guess the best way to put it is morals are questionable. They usually believe that they're right and everybody else is wrong. Is that the way he sees it, or is he just trying to live up to the ideals of David Pilcher?
It's kind of a combination of the two. He believes in Pilcher's teachings because it's all he's ever been given. And the code of ethics that he lives under is just the time. It's the 4032 code of ethics. I mean, he can't really question it because he understands that this is the ultimate way to keep humanity alive.
And I do like the relationship between Jason Patrick Yedlin and your character of Jason, because I just love the kind of like the pushing that goes on, and you could see that, you know, at times his patience with him is almost pushed a little bit to the brink a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, very few people in the story have, I guess, a power over Jason in that way. Not necessarily a power over him, but have him in their pocket like Dr. Yedlin does, being a necessary person in this town. He's really put himself in a position, which was really smart of the writers, to kind of create that situation with Carrie and the injury. And now Jason is looking at Yedlin and frustrated and understands the dangers of him in this town, but can do nothing. At least until he's trained up the younger doctors.
You were there last year, of course, and now you're featured more this year, obviously. How has the series changed? Has the vibe changed a lot from season 1 to 2?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we're telling a different story than what was in season 1, and I came in late in season 1, so I missed out on a lot of the kind of confusion and the, because it was a mystery unto the cast.
Yeah,
there was a lot of hidden things, and I heard that you would shoot things and not really know exactly what was going on because the writers are keeping it so close to their cup. But this one has been much more. I mean, especially being a lead this year rather than just a guest spot, I was able to kind of access the story more with the showrunner, Mark Friedman.
Yeah.
He was much more open to having discussion and kind of, like, he kept, there's still stuff to be revealed.
I'm sure.
In the next couple episodes, but like, which, you know, when you get the episode and you read it and you're like, you're like, this is crazy. How did he hide this? He was always very open to kind of being approached and answer questions and backstory and just kind of finding the Jason that made sense to both of us.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, too, another relationship that I like is with Casey's Carrie. I'm still trying to figure out exactly how he feels about her, but I detect there is some feeling there.
Oh, what, Jason?
Yeah.
For her?
Yeah.
Oh, he absolutely loves her.
Ah.
Absolutely loves her. It's interesting, though, because we were figuring out how to play the Jason that was in the first season in this season, where he can't be as violent as he was in the other ones, or in the other show, like the first season. And we found that Carrie was actually his conduit of calm. He understood that if he got into that place of rage and violence, he would scare her and he would lose her. So his control is basically driven by her staying like in love with him.
Yeah.
He needs to keep himself contained so that he doesn't damage the relationship between him and Carrie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a dynamic I enjoy watching every week. And how she kind of reins him in a little bit occasionally, and that's good,
yeah.
Cool to see that.
Yeah.
Now, had you ever read the books before you took this job?
No, it was, the books were their own thing,
yeah.
I think. And I think the first season was very much attached to the books.
Mm-hmm.
And when I knew that this was coming up, when we found out about the second season, I contemplated going into that, but I decided to go more into the reading of different characters throughout history that I thought would inform the character that I'm going to play, rather than going in and seeing what I could pull from the original writing to create this guy.
Yeah, no, it's I like what you're doing with him. It's interesting. It's really to see his journey, so to speak, and now in a position of power and how he handles that power. People like that are dangerous because they're so stuck in their ideals that a lot of the other things just kind of go by the wayside. And that's what I find interesting about him. What do you like
about him? What I like about him is he's so dangerous in that respect.
Yeah.
One of the beautiful things about playing this character is that I get to kind of delve into the idea of what it would be to be a Nazi youth or like a fundamentalist, somebody that's been given such a strict education and doesn't see anything else as being right.
Yeah.
And then finding the humanity in that,
mm-hmm.
which is always, you always ultimately have to find humanity in every trick you play, good or bad. But I really found it, I wouldn't say challenging. It was kind of beautiful to like go into that place and strip away all the ideals of ethics that I have as a person.
Yeah.
And make like pulling the trigger, like shooting this person because they need to die because this is the best way to do it. And actually thinking like that for that moment in performance, it was really fun to like go into that place and find that mindset. Because it's a place that we never go.
Yeah.
We never go into that, like, what if it was the end of the world?
Mm-hmm.
What if we had to make these hard decisions? What if it was post-apocalyptic? What would you do? How would you react to this? Would you just turtle, or would you rise up to the challenge?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, essentially, this is all that's left of humanity.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And that's the thing. Part of me is like, we've gone through all this, and this is what we have, and, you know, we it seems like we're still not learning the same, you know, lessons that history has taught us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of repeating them again. You know, I mean, Pilcher essentially set himself up as a benevolent dictator in a way, really, but at least in his mind. But yeah, it's the same stakes. And, you know, it's what's also intriguing to me about the series.
Yeah, and having Jason Patrick, like Doc Yedlin, and also like Ethan Burke, Matt Dillon in the first season,
yeah.
Both of them are basically there as a conduit for the 2016, 2015 audience.
Yep.
To kind of picking through the code of ethics that we live in 4032.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like that aspect. It's not just so much, boom, you're now in the future. Boom, now the audience is just kind of like outside looking in voyeurism.
Yeah.
They're forced to have a seat in this. They're forced to like have an opinion in this whole crazy world and everything that's happening.
You know, what's interesting too is the relationship with Hope Davis's Megan. Because I guess she was, you know, essentially his instructor at one point.
Yeah.
And taught him, and now she's underneath him. You know, he runs everything. And there's also like a little bit, you know, she goes with the party line, but there's a little tension between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Speak about that relationship. That's an interesting one too.
Yeah, absolutely. When we were figuring out Jason, we kind of had to look into the history of Jason. And Mark and I came to this the like agreement on his backstory is that Jason was raised in a room, like an empty bare room. There's a, you know, bed sort of thing just to kind of keep him occupied, and a tablet on the wall that he would learn lessons, like history lessons, science, all this stuff. He would have this tablet, and then either Pam Pilcher or Megan would come and get him, and they would just, you know, give him that human contact, that human interaction. And then once in a while, he would be taken up to the office, and he would see David Pilcher, and Pilcher would give him his coin, like his fossil. He would give him his lesson. He would show him the monsters outside the wall.
Yeah.
He had, like, very few interactions with him, but he was always seen as, like, I guess he's my father? I guess? Like, he's never given a straight answer.
Yeah.
So, as you saw in, like, episode 3, Megan at the birthday party, she is not the mother, not the parent figure that Pam Pilcher is.
Yeah.
He got to see somebody that was almost like a friend, like an older friend.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, there's a beautiful scene coming up in this next episode.
Cool.
Because we just ended 7 with Miss Hope Davis in the chair, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there's a very, very, there's a beautiful goodbye scene.
Ah, cool.
And you definitely see the drive that she gave him, the fight that she gave him. She taught him to, like, really stand behind this. But ultimately, if something that Jason isn't necessarily aware of, I think subconsciously he is, both Carrie and Megan manipulate him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they have their ulterior motives. And Jason is just there to be manipulated by them, and then he listens or he doesn't listen, and then it damages either one of their plans.
Sci-Fi Talk returns in a moment.
Shop online to set up your measurement profile and choose your fabric and customizations. Or if you prefer an in-person experience, book an appointment at an Indochino showroom to work with an expert style guide. Then sit back while your suit is made for you and delivered straight to your door. Suits start just $449 and premium fitted shirts start at $89. So, if you're ringing in 2023 with wedding bells, plan your custom look with Indochino. Go to Indochino.com and use code NEWCHAPTER to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's INDOCHINO.com, promo code NEWCHAPTER.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Back on Sci-Fi Talk, I'm Tony Tolo.
You know, that's the thing is, his relationship with Pam, I mean, that relationship really changed. And, you know, in a way, she was really the last connection to David Pilcher being his sister. So, that was a tough one for him, I'm sure. It wasn't as easy as it looked, I'm sure.
No. It set him off in a place of going internal and cutting people off. You see that, like, after 3, the Carrie connection took a few episodes to come back to be really strong, and he started to question Megan, and he started to take it. When Pam puts him in the position where he has to kill her, he does what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Which is always what I always talk about with Jason. If there was a food shortage and there was a 70-year-old woman and a 17-year-old girl, and he had to shoot one of them, without hesitation, he would shoot the 70-year-old woman, knowing that the 17-year-old girl has more, she has more to give to society. And people go, oh, that's messed up. But it's what Jason does. I'm not saying that he doesn't get affected by it, because it takes its toll on him, but he does it and then later feels it.
Mm.
And the way that he felt, the way that it was always like, Ty West, he directed episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing that we talked about was, what Jason goes through in 3, he puts that away in 4. If he addresses that emotional distress, he's going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until 7, no, in episode 6 with the bloodletting scene.
Yeah.
When it starts to wear on him and it starts to get under his skin again, he starts to open up and he has that in private with Carrie, he has that breakdown moment when he truly doubts everything that he's there for.
It sounds like that maybe not just yourself, but all the actors can kind of go to the showrunner and give him ideas a little bit as to how to play this. Because, yeah, the series is deviating from the book and kind of forging its own path a little bit while still keeping the themes of the novels.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, I mean, I think that this is one of the best casts to be part of, because everybody was smart, hardworking, and it always came down to the story. It wasn't like masturbatory in any way. Everybody was always just trying to get to the truth.
Yeah.
And I mean, just as an education, just as an actor being educated by other actors, especially like Oscar nominees.
Yeah.
And also Oscar winners, you realize that really good work comes from putting in the work. And the creative team was completely involved in just making this a better, stronger story that every episode was, we cared about every scene and we really worked our asses off to like make it the best we could.
Now, it looks like also that the Abbeys are going to play a big part for the rest of the season without giving anything away, of course, but is that a possibility? Let's put it that way.
Well, let's just say that the Abbeys are not animals.
Yeah.
We know that already. We know that. There is an intelligence to them, and there's a humanity to them. And one aspect of humanity is vengeance, and Margaret is angry.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say about that.
Well, that is from the novel, that the Abbeys are, are intelligent. So,
yeah, exactly.
They're just a different version of us. You know, maybe our next step or whatever, but based on this world. But that's amazing. Now, do you guys, have you had a chance to see Knight? Has he been around? I know he's a busy man.
He's a busy man. He wasn't able to come out during shooting, but I had a really extensive phone conversation with him.
Oh, cool.
Early on in the season, he just wanted to like touch base about like approaching this character, and we had this amazing like hour long discussion about Jason.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really cool for me to do that, but it was also just really helpful to have him kind of sound off on it.
Sure. Now, is there any word on possibly a third season at this point, or is it too soon?
It's too soon. We'll find out. I'm not sure. I never, between season one and season two, I thought there was about a 15% chance of season two happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, guys.
We weren't sure either. I mean, I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I liked how things went, and I recognize that there's a lot more story to tell too. And I still feel the same way. I think we're only scratching the surface, on this season. So it's an interesting world, and it reminds me of so many things, especially when Jason came into it. It reminded me of the 60s series The Prisoner, where an ex-secret agent is held captive in this village. And it's very similar that way, because he's like rebelling at every step. And Jason's character is doing the same. Not your Jason, but Jason Patrick's character is doing the same thing. You know, he will just get his shots in once in a while to remind that what you are all doing is probably not the way it should be done. So I like that. And it's, I think we needed it in the 60s. And I think we still need that, today, rather than just blindly going along with something. I like people that kind of stir the pot a little bit.
Absolutely. I think that's what it's good to play the antithesis of that.
Yeah.
Because you, as an actor, obviously I don't feel the same way as Jason feels. And I mean, like my Jason,
right?
I don't feel the same way as he feels, but I get to play the person that I would defy against the most.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have to have that power in us. We have to have that power as human beings, because if we see something that we don't agree with, if we roll over, then it will just continue.
What's interesting too is his look Was there a lot of discussion, like what he would wear, even his haircut and everything? Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes with what your backstory, that he was kind of kept in a room. So you could see that, you know, his sort of style is kind of limited to what he saw.
Yeah. The 1960s spy thing mixed with the brown shirts.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we sat down, I sat down with Ian Ballard, the key hair guy. I was like, I want a close clipped haircut, but I want it to have a 1960s, 1950s feel. And then we went into the discussion on where the part was going to be. One of the things that we talked about was JFK. His hair was engineered.
Yeah. You know,
yeah. Because we have a feminine eye and we have a masculine eye. And because we're not symmetrical in our faces, our mm-hmm. smile usually has a more prominent side that it goes up on. And so where your smile is, like where it goes up to, that's going to be on your feminine side. So if you part your hair on the feminine side, people's eyes, when they look at you, it goes to the part and then it goes to the feminine eye and they trust you.
Ah.
And I wanted Jason to have that part on that side because I wanted him to be trustworthy.
Yeah.
I wanted people to look at him and be like, I believe in this person. I trust this person. If we did it in the first season, actually, ironically, we did the part the other way.
Ah.
But it wasn't intentional until we were looking at the old pictures and I was like, let's do that other thing. Like, let's do that. Let's bring people in, draw this person in because I want a 50-50 split of the audience to hate or love me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my goal. And, or like, you know, hate my character, love me the actor. You know, that's one of the things that's been brilliant about this is people go like, I hate your character, but I love you. And I'm like, this is awesome. This is exactly what I want. And yeah, people pity Jason. They feel affected by Jason. They have emotional reactions to Jason. I'm so happy that I wasn't just a foil in this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's, you know, credit you in the writing is that there's a lot of layers to him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are times, I guess the best way to say it is there's a little sympathy for the devil there too, you know, based on how he was raised and to have that all there. And then the performance is there. It just really makes him a lot more believable character rather than just your cliche, even though he doesn't have a mustache, the old twirling mustache mm-hmm. kind of thing. where the actor can actually overplay it because there's not much there on the page or there's not much communicated as to the way he's going. So
yeah, play the villain.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I've really found him to be an intriguing character. Actually, because I bring a lot of my work home.
Yeah.
I do a lot of work at home. The character stays with me for the time of shooting.
Yeah.
And when we were done shooting this season, my wife and I basically had to say goodbye to this guy, and it was a really bad, really like sad moment for us.
Mm.
Just to put him to bed, because he is just such a sad, beautiful character.
Yeah, but you have to, because Tom has to kind of go on, you know.
Yeah, Tom has to. I can't keep living as Jason.
That's right. You know, that's so true. I was going to ask you about, you know, bringing your work, you know, does a character follow you, you know, mm-hmm. Home, and obviously he did. So I would think he would. Those strong kind of characters are kind of hard to just, you know, put aside and let go. You know,
especially when you do a couple months with a character.
Yeah,
it's not something that you just kind of like put on the suit and tie to play. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gotta be part of your personality. And yeah, there was actually I have a friend. His name is Michael Patrick. He just got onto the show Frontier. He just shot the first season of it, and it's a period piece.
Mm.
And he realized that his character was he's very like bombastic and very violent. And he noticed getting into the process of playing this character, he was getting angry easy, which is dangerous because we still have to live our lives as people.
Yeah.
And I noticed that too. I was starting to get angry easy. Like, I mean, on the street, like I'm driving the car and suddenly I'm just mad. And it was something that I had to like, you always have to have exit plans.
Sure.
For character stuff, especially when you play somebody like psychotic or suicidal, you know, just I played characters in shows where I have to be in a real, like a really bad place to play them. And you kind of come home and you look at your loved one. I look into my dog's face. I smile. I feel good. I clear it. And then I go back to being Tom.
Oh, wow.
But there's a few days where you kind of like, especially after like a big emotional day.
Yeah.
You go home and you just kind of find your unwinding. You turn on YouTube or something.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, does the cast treat you differently because of him?
Jason?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, everybody's amazing. We all know what we're doing. We understand what we have to do, and the performance is the performance, and I don't know how to even describe it, but there's a different setting when we do a simple scene
right.
to when we do a complex emotional scene.
Sure.
Where we have a lot of fun with the simple stuff because we know this is the scene where we're just telling the story.
Right.
But then when we have one where it's like, okay, yeah, now I have to kill so-and-so. And I mean, like, even the crew, there's days when people are kind of like, what do you think they're having for lunch? And then there's days where they're like, head down, shooting. This is what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how it all works. It's mm-hmm. great. This is a great group of people. And, you know, I'm really glad we got a chance to talk because you're a very gifted actor. That's very obvious from watching your performance. And
thank you.
And I really want to see what else you do with him. And I hope that the story carries on. I've actually enjoyed this season more than last, believe it or not.
Cool. Yeah. You know what? I have too. And it's not just a self-satisfying reason, but there was something good about the first season that wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
And I would rather see the world we live in this season as opposed to trying to keep the audience on the edge of a seat.
Yeah.
It's like the whole first season was like, what are we doing here? And then this season has been, this is what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And people go, oh my God, really? That's what's happening.
Yeah.
And everything, like all the stuff with the kids, all the stuff with the Abbeys, all the stuff that's coming out is just, we are opening up, like turning the page to what could be a future in a scary, scary world.
Yeah, no, that's great. It was set up beautifully at the end of last season, and then you guys just dove right in, and we knew what we were getting into, but then the layers started unfolding, and some really good stuff, you know, I think came this season. So,
yeah,
you know, here's hoping that there's more to come, because it's a worthy show, and it's actually the fact that it's on the summer, it's like reading a good summer novel. You know, you really will.
Yeah.
You get into it, you know, and you really enjoy it. And and it's great. Now, lastly, are any of your castmates or yourself going to San Diego Comic-Con at all?
I'm going to a thing down there. They were going to have a panel, mm-hmm. but ended up that somebody couldn't make it, and it kind of didn't justify itself.
Sure.
And so it's a bummer, but I'm going to be down there for a little bit. I might go into the convention. I might do a little cruise around, but I'm going to be there.
Oh, cool.
For some press stuff. Anyways, it's not going to be like, we're not going to do a panel or anything, but I'm going to be just hanging around.
Have you ever been there before? Have you ever seen it?
No, I haven't. You can kind of get the impression from like pictures and stuff and from videos.
Yeah, it's its own animal. It really is. There's just no other way to describe it. But it goes by. You get there, and before you know it, it's Sunday and it's over. I mean, that's the way it is from my side.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm busy every day. I mean, there's not a day that I get a break. It's I literally have stuff scheduled, and as soon as July 4th ended, I started getting more and more emails about things. So, and I'm still getting them now. And we're less than a week away. So,
awesome.
So go figure. So where it goes. Well, again, it was a pleasure, and hope we can talk again, because I think you're definitely an actor to watch.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
And I'm Tony Tolato. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of Sci-Fi Talk. Take care.
Hi, this is Jamie Bamber.
Hey, this is Katie Sackhoff.
Hi, I'm Tom O'Pennicott. I play Hilo on the hit television series Battlestar Galactica. And you're listening to Sci-Fi Talk.